From Uniontown to Port Allegheny, Warren to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it's official, voters will now have a say on limiting the governor's emergency powers. Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation is here to talk about the proposed constitutional amendment. A new cancer program is being planned at the Penn State Hershey Medical Center. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Jennifer Seller Miska in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And the so-called For the People Act is actually a For the Politicians Act and a violation of free speech. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has details on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Steve Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. In the better late than never category, Governor Tom Wolf will participate in a COVID-19 task force that will include lawmakers from both parties. Until now, the Wolf administration has taken a go-it-alone approach to handling the pandemic, with disastrous results. With rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine confusing and chaotic, the task force's first job will be to speed up deployment of the inoculations. Among those placed on the task force is State Representative Tim O'Neill of Washington County, who recently sponsored successful legislation calling for utilizing the National Guard to spur the inoculation process. Republican leadership in both the House and Senate this past week sent a letter to the Independent Regulatory Review Commission stating their opposition to the job-killing Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGIE. REGGIE is a radical environmental proposal to impose regulations on coal-fired power plants and other energy producers, the end result of which will be higher consumer prices for electricity and a significant loss of jobs. Lawmakers contend REGGIE is a tax and therefore must be approved via the legislative process and not through an obscure regulatory process. In political news, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has announced his candidacy for the U.S. Senate seat, which will be vacated next year by Republican Senator Pat Toomey, who has announced he will not seek re-election. Fetterman has staked out political ground on the far left of the political spectrum and is expected to have primary opposition. Large fields of candidates from both parties are expected to vie for that seat, as well as for governor, as Tom Wolf is term limited and cannot seek re-election next year. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. A state constitutional amendment that would rebalance the exercise of emergency powers will be on the May primary ballot. After nearly a year of watching Governor Tom Wolf abuse those powers, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation says it is time to restore checks and balances. Steve is vice president of the Commonwealth Foundation. He is here to talk about the proposed constitutional amendment and a number of other key issues. Steve, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Steve, a major development coming out of the General Assembly here before they took their recess to go into budgetary matters, they finally took action that is going to give voters the opportunity to weigh in on Governor Wolf's emergency orders and powers. Can you give us a bit of background as to what is at play here and what opportunity we, the voters, are going to have?
Sure, and thank you, Loman, for the opportunity. The existing law in Pennsylvania allows a governor to declare a disaster emergency for a period of 90 days. And after the expiration or at the expiration of the 90 days, the governor has the unilateral power to extend the disaster declaration again for 90 days, 90 days, 90 days, and so forth and so on. And Governor Wolf has now kept open a disaster declaration for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania for almost 1 year since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic back in 2020. So once that emergency declaration is made by the governor, he gets through the law and the Constitution a number of extraordinary powers. He can exercise executive powers that ordinarily the governor would have to first get approval from the General Assembly to do through the legislative process, but instead he can take unilateral action. So we've seen over the past almost 1 year now, Governor Wolf doing that very thing, taking unilateral action, and unfortunately in many cases in a very arbitrary manner, in a manner that has not really reflected the science, that things we know about the virus and its spread scientifically, and has disregarded, in many cases, the lives and livelihoods of the citizens of this Commonwealth. And he has just been able to keep extending it. The legislature has valiantly fought back. They've attempted to restrain him, but in each case, they were rebuffed first by his resistance and then ultimately by the state Supreme Court, which sided with the governor and allowed him to keep the declaration intact. So finally, the General Assembly said, enough is enough, and they enacted a constitutional amendment, and it had to pass during 2020 and again this year in 2021. And now this constitutional amendment can go on the spring ballot in May for the citizens of Pennsylvania to vote on themselves. And what the amendment would do is cut off the emergency declaration after 21 days of the governor declaring it, and could only be extended if the legislature, the House and the Senate, the people's voice in state government, actually allow him to continue it. So finally, there would be a restoration of the usual constitutional checks and balances of the legislature against the actions of the executive.
By having this amendment put in place then, Steve, there's some question as to, would this then not allow the governor to have the flexibility that he needs to deal with an emergency? But can we not count on our legislators to allow the state of emergency to continue to exist if, in fact, there were a real emergency that warranted the governor having these extraordinary powers?
Yes, and absolutely everyone recognizes that there are times when a chief executive of state, a governor, has to act quickly in the face of some emerging disaster. No doubt about that. And that's why even this amendment allows for that first 21 days, the governor still has that unilateral power. Certainly, everyone understands that there is a constitutional balance. The legislature should have a voice as it represents the people of the state. The governor, of course, should have a voice, and the court should have a voice. But no one branch of government should have a voice that is devoid of proper influence and input from the other branches. And so the new Declaration Amendment, if enacted by the voters, would finally rebalance the scales and give the legislature a voice in whether a disaster declaration should be extended.
And can you give us some examples, Steve, of what type of actions the governor has taken under these emergency powers that have had a really strong and dramatic impact on the lives of many Pennsylvanians?
Probably there's been a number of them, but probably the most troubling was the list that the governor created of life-sustaining businesses. And if you weren't on that list of life-sustaining businesses, you suddenly had to shut down your entire operation. But the life-sustaining business list was arbitrary. It didn't come from any scientific process or even procedural process. It didn't match up, for example, with Department of Homeland Security's official list of how businesses should be conducted during a pandemic. It didn't match up with other processes that governments had used to evaluate which businesses might be essential in an emergency. And instead, it just arbitrarily assigned businesses to different categories. And for some, it meant economic disaster. Yet there was no due process. There was no appeal right. There was no right to a hearing. You simply had to beg the government to let you stay open. And if they didn't, you had no place to go. You had to shut down. And it's that kind of a thing, that kind of an executive overreach that we never want to see happen again in Pennsylvania.
We are talking with Stephen Bloom. Steve is vice president of the Commonwealth Foundation. He's going to tell us a little bit more about the Commonwealth Foundation in a few minutes. But Steve, so we know this proposed constitutional amendment that would rebalance emergency powers will be on the ballot this May for the primary. There's another proposed amendment, not quite that far along yet. It's called the Taxpayer Protection Amendment. Tell us what's at play there.
The Taxpayer Protection Amendment is a common sense amendment that, again, would allow the voters of Pennsylvania to decide whether or not they want the government to have unlimited ability to keep spending more and more money every year. And what the Taxpayer Protection Amendment would do is restrict state spending in any given year, restrict the increase to the rate of inflation plus population growth in the Commonwealth. So, in other words, the government couldn't grow faster than the actual population and economy of Pennsylvania. Historically, unfortunately, the government in our Commonwealth has been growing much faster than the rate of population growth and economic growth. So the government is getting proportionately bigger and bigger and bigger every year, decade after decade. The Taxpayer Protection Amendment would end that sort of spiraling growth and instead restrict growth to a reasonable level. It doesn't say you can't grow. It doesn't say that the state government has to freeze all its expenses. It simply says it can't grow any faster than our population and our economy. And it would be something that other states have done that successfully has been done at some level, at least, in 30 different states to just prevent the government from having this blank check to keep spending more and more every year.
And this is particularly timely, Steve, because the governor is now proposing a massive hike in the personal income tax, the individual income tax. Tell us what he's proposing there, and why does this affect more than just individuals, but also literally hundreds of thousands of small businesses around the state?
Governor Wolf has now proposed a 46% increase in the state's personal income tax, taking the tax rate from 3.07% to 4.49%. It would represent the largest tax increase in Pennsylvania's history if it were enacted. And that is all to support a budget that he proposed that would increase spending by 11%. And just as an example, we were talking about the Taxpayer Protection Amendment. This is the kind of thing we would be trying to stop if the voters were able to stop if the voters would enact the Taxpayer Protection Act.
And any time somebody from the left, the governor, or members of the General Assembly propose these dramatic increases in spending, Steve, they always find a way to make it about the children. And the governor is now saying he wants this so he can spend more money on public education. But go a little bit into detail here on what he's proposing and how it would actually limit educational opportunity.
It's amazing because Governor Wolf, first and foremost, he's talking about basically a 50% tax hike for about 60% of Pennsylvania taxpayers. So it has drastic impact. If you look at the situation with Pennsylvania's public schools right now, many of these schools have been actually closed or partially closed during this current school year, and even some last year toward the end of the school year. But yet their available funding has continued to increase. They've got massive reserve funds of over $4 billion. They've received benefits through the federal stimulus or federal disaster COVID relief legislation that was done in Washington on a couple of different occasions where they've gotten a large infusion of cash. So the public schools of Pennsylvania actually have more money available than they've ever had. And now the governor is saying he has to raise taxes on our small businesses, which also pay the personal income tax, just like individuals do. So the governor's proposing hammering our mom-and-pop shops, which are already struggling, with this massive new tax hike, all for this theoretical benefit for the public schools, which have already received drastically more funding than they were ever expected to. Now, fortunately, I've talked to a number of legislators, and I've heard comments about the governor's proposal, like it's dead on arrival, it's completely insane, it makes no sense, the governor's living in an alternative universe, and I'm hoping that sentiment will continue and the legislature will stand up against the governor's really detrimental proposal to increase taxes by such a huge amount.
Steve Bloom is vice president of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, tell us a bit about the Commonwealth Foundation and where can folks go to learn a bit more?
The Commonwealth Foundation is Pennsylvania's free market think tank. We advocate for legislation that will help empower the free markets to give every Pennsylvania a shot to be prosperous and successful. And our website is commonwealthfoundation.org.
Steve Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Loman.
The Penn State Hershey Medical Center is a world-renowned medical facility, but it isn't resting on its laurels. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation is here to talk with Jennifer Sellers-Miska about a proposed new cancer program. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Jenny, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Jenny, it sounds like more exciting things are about to happen at the Hershey Medical Center.
Specifically, I think we're talking about the Penn State Cancer Institute, which is part of the College of Medicine, a comprehensive medical center, which is part of the broader Penn State Health that is ever-evolving in central Pennsylvania.
We're looking at the inception of a new cancer institute coming to Hershey Medical Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania. How did that come about?
Well, actually, we were established as a cancer institute in 2000. And our building, as it stands now, was opened in 2009. So we've been around for a while. Put it in context, the Hershey Medical Center just celebrated its 50th year reunion. So, as I said, we are part of the larger academic medical center and health system, pioneering research with advanced cancer care.
That's exciting. What kind of things are going on with your research?
I have to say first that I am not a researcher, nor am I a medical physician. However, I have worked with the Cancer Institute for 5 years, and so much of cancer care is based upon what we can discover in cancer research. And at Hershey and the Penn State Cancer Institute, we're really focused on multidisciplinary teams that include surgeons, oncologists, radiation oncologists, and other medical specialists. But the goal is that that medical team handles direct patient care, but the scientists are unraveling the cancer.
What's the balance going to be in regards to cancer care versus research?
The Cancer Center, which is based in Hershey, is part of the larger Penn State Cancer Institute. And the Penn State Cancer Institute spans the entire Penn State University research machine. And as you can imagine, there is wonderful research going on across the university in areas like the sciences at University Park, agriculture, health, information technology, and all of those things combined with what we're doing at the College of Medicine, where there's extensive research going on in terms of not only cancer types, but other medical research breakthroughs. So the Cancer Institute is a multidisciplinary research institute, and the Cancer Center based in Hershey is one part of that. And I will add, too, that cancer is also being treated across the Penn State health system through St. Joe's and Reading, as well as Andrews and Patel, which is on both the west and the east shores of central Pennsylvania and outside of Harrisburg. So I'm not sure that I could tell you the balance, but we're doing both, and both are important.
That's exciting. It's an exciting field to be in because there's so many breakthroughs occurring today.
Absolutely. There are breakthroughs, and this is the time because there are so many opportunities for advancement. You know, someday some researcher is going to wake up with a brilliant idea that is going to solve this problem, but we're not quite there yet. To some degree, we talk about cancer, and there's so much else going on in our health space right now, a lot taking up our mind space. But I just want to remind folks that cancer is still the second leading cause of death in the U.S. Pennsylvania has the third largest rate of cancer in the U.S. And just at Hershey, we're seeing approximately 2,000 newly diagnosed cases annually. So this is a situation that won't change, and we could double our space and be very happy with that. But there's nothing in the works at this moment.
My guest today is Jenny Seller-Miska, who is the Associate Director of Individual Giving at the Hershey Cancer Institute. Jenny, why is there so much incidence of cancer in Pennsylvania? How did we get that distinction?
Well, this is something we're spending a lot of time looking at because our responsibility is to our 28-county service area in central Pennsylvania. And there are a lot of thoughts about why this, and proven why Pennsylvania has such a high incidence of cancer. And some of that has to do with the age of our population, the health and nutrition of our population, tobacco use. And so these are the things that we are studying that are specific to our area, because we understand that the incidences here may be different than they are in other parts of the country.
Jenny, what's the menu of different cancers that the Institute is addressing?
We work with people of all types of cancers. And so from lung cancer to skin cancer and melanomas to lymphomas, blood cancers, breast cancer. We're a comprehensive cancer center.
What excites you most about what's going on at the Cancer Institute today? What's most interesting?
One piece I'm super excited about is something called the CARE Center. And the CARE, C-A-R-E, stands for Cancer Assistance and Resource Center. The center, which is a part of what's already in Hershey, our cancer center there, but it's a place that we're renovating, and it is slated to open this spring, but it will provide comprehensive whole person care. In other words, it will allow us to see the whole person and not just their disease. So resources that might be available to folks there would include support such as financial counseling, nutrition and exercise support, distress management, and complementary health and healing tools. And as I said, that will open this spring. It's a long time in coming, but we've already been providing excellent clinical care, but this will, again, allow us to look at the whole person and provide whole person care. Another thing I'm excited about is our community outreach. So I think as we talk to Pennsylvanians, it's important to know that we're working tirelessly in our communities to address health disparities and focus on those characteristics of our 28-county service area. So priority populations for the Penn State Cancer Institute would be rural, Hispanic, Latino, especially in the Reading area, and African-American, Black communities in the Harrisburg area. So those are two things I'm excited about, and the list keeps growing.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today has been Jenny Seller-Miska, who is the Associate Director of Individual Giving at the Penn State College of Medicine. And Jenny, thank you for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio Program.
Well, thank you so much. If people want to learn more, they can go to cancer.psu.edu. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you, and good luck with the important work that you're doing. Back to you,
thank
Loman.
Thank you.
It is called the For the People Act, but it is actually an assault on the free speech rights of every American. So says Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Privacy is for people. Transparency is for the government. At one point in time, that was uncontroversial. Today, though, things are different. H.R. 1, the For the People Act, wasn't designated Bill No. 1 by happenstance, but rather deliberately by Speaker Pelosi, as this is the top agenda in Washington this Congress. Americans for Prosperity opposes this bill because it is for politicians. It is not for the people. We think six reasons undergird why all 20 members of Pennsylvania's congressional delegation should oppose this bill. First, it is for incumbent politicians, not the people. It complicates our election laws with burdensome regulations and makes it harder for people to engage in political speech. Second, it would remake the Federal Election Commission into a partisan agency by changing the structure of the FEC from a six-member bipartisan commission into a partisan-led five-member commission and create a powerful new chair designated by the president. This commission would engage in investigations and pass regulations without any support from the other side of the aisle. And for an agency as impactful as the FEC, a bipartisan structure is critical to its legitimacy. Third, H.R. 1 unconstitutionally compels speech by requiring nonprofits that publicly communicate on important issues to declare whether they support or oppose a candidate that appears in their materials. It does this by defining and changing the definition of electioneering communication to include issue advocacy, even if that occurs long before an election. Instead of encouraging Americans to work together to solve policy problems, it forces them to pick a political team. It's counterproductive, and this compelled political speech violates the First Amendment. Fourth, it discourages Americans from supporting the organizations serving their communities. When politicians compel individuals to disclose what causes they support, they violate privacy and subject them to harassment. H.R. 1 would require nonprofits to make campaign-related disbursements to disclose the name and address of all people who donate above a certain amount. In this current toxic political environment, it's even more important to protect people's privacy from politicians who have no business knowing the personal information of folks who oppose them. If HR 1 would prevent nonprofits from supporting pioneering causes, nonprofits that disperse grants to other institutions would be impacted under these new rules. If grant-making organizations knew or should have known that an organization they've supported spent a certain amount of dollars on campaign-related disbursements, then the grant-making organization must disclose its donors too. Nonprofits would be particularly reluctant to support newer organizations pioneering critical causes with public policy implications out of fear that a potential grantee's conduct could one day require the disclosure of their donors. We should be encouraging, not discouraging, citizens and philanthropic organizations to support promising efforts to make our society better. Last and sixth, HR 1 would reduce online free speech. It broadens disclaimer and disclosure requirements and applies those standards to mediums like the internet, where those requirements would have a profoundly negative impact. It would overturn the FEC's internet exemption. Well, the good news, a coalition of organizations from across the nation have joined forces as People United for Privacy. Over 130 organizations have already signed a letter that's been delivered to Speaker Pelosi, Leader McCarthy, and Senate Leaders Schumer and McConnell. Check out the signers from Pennsylvania by visiting unitedforprivacy.com. Organizations from Gun Owners of America to Commonwealth Foundation to Veterans and Patriots United have signed, all signaling their agreement that donors and supporters being listed in publicly available databases, making them subject to harassment and intimidation, is a complete violation of citizens' privacy. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRPV-FM in Clearfield, WRVI-FM in St. Mary's, along with WRJV-FM in Breezewood, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.